This is the Lunch Bite with Ian Bass.
I am delighted to welcome into the studio a very good friend of mine. Lon and I, we were actually talking a little bit earlier off air that we go back probably about 3 or 4 years when both of us were in very different situations in our career where we dressed very differently, we thought very differently, and we probably acted very differently. But it's a delight to welcome Lana Elise Roy. Lana, good afternoon and welcome to the Lunch Bite.
Thanks, Ian. It's wonderful to be here.
Great. So Lana, first I have to ask you something, because like I do with most of my guests, I ask for your bio, but then I ask a little bit of something on top of that. So you sent me these amazing things and you said that you love the stage. You love singing, acting and speaking. So are you going to sing for us today?
You didn't mention that as part of my interview, but I would love to.
Okay. Well, fantastic. Well, we might get you to sing a song as we end, but for now,
with
more
pleasure.
That'll be great. So that already gives me an indication that you're a creative person, but you weren't always a creative person. Tell me a little bit about your career and how you navigated this journey to where you are today.
So I think I've always been a creative person, but I haven't been an entrepreneur. I haven't been able to take that creativity and use it to its best. So my journey started quite a few years ago, and I was working for a company whereby I managed to grow the business into quite a large business and eventually sold my shares. And from there, I worked with another few companies as a consultant. But what happened is I noticed, well, let me say, after a bit of coaching sessions, I noticed there was a pattern. And in terms of that pattern, I realized that I had become dependent on specifically a man who I saw as my knight in shining armor, that I couldn't do anything, that I wouldn't be able to succeed on my own without a man by my side. And when that was pointed out to me, I realized, hold on, that's maybe what's been holding me back. Let me take back my own power. Yes. Let me empower myself and say, try this journey on your own. See what you're capable. And boy, has it been an incredible 3-year journey. You know, it's been so worthwhile, everything that's happened.
So I want to pose a question to you, and I want you to give it a bit of thought. And when we come back from the ad break, we'll delve into it. But you've linked a lot of this back, and you spoke about patterns. You've linked this back to education, and you've said that there's a clear link between how we go through an education system and what that does to us. And we're going to talk a bit more about the creativity muscle when we come back right after this.
This is the Lunch Bite with Ian Bass.
It's just gone the hour. It's just gone 20 past the hour of 12 o'clock on this Wednesday afternoon. It's hard to believe we're almost at the end of February, Lana. Where's this year gone?
Sure. Every year just seems to be flying by quicker and quicker. I think it's, I don't know if it's because we're getting older.
Absolutely.
Or because technology is part of our lives now. I'm not sure. But yeah, every year at the end of the year, I sit and say, where did that year go?
Absolutely. So we were chatting just before the ad break that you identified certain patterns, and this was a lot of reflection that you did through your career, and the one thing that you picked up was around education. Tell us a little bit more about your discovery in the education area.
Okay, so in terms of the education area, let me start with a story. So in about the 1960s, 70s, there was a Professor George Land, who was a NASA consultant, and he was asked to develop some form of creativity test to test the astronauts, because you hope when they're stuck up there that they're going to be able to come down somehow. But the test proved to be quite successful, so he decided to run a longitudinal study. And he ran, or he gave that same test that he gave to the NASA astronauts to 5-year-old children. And those children scored a 98% creativity genius level.
Wow.
He retested those same kids at the age of 10, had dropped to 30%. And again at 12, had dropped to 12%. And then when he tested them as adults, had dropped to 2%.
Wow.
So what he concluded, well, first of all, that we are taught non-creative behavior, or that schools, if you've ever watched the most famous TED talk by the Sir Ken Robinson, is schools educate us out of creativity. So I actually got into this through my son, who was actually struggling, who is struggling maybe in the educational system. Mm-hmm. And I watched this TED talk on how schools creativity, and it just led me on this journey to understanding what has actually happened with our creativity. Why are we sitting with such a low creativity genius level? How do we actually correct that? Because, Ian, I don't know if you know that creativity is sitting as the number one skill in the workplace now, according to the LinkedIn, a recent LinkedIn survey, according to the World Economic Forum Future of Jobs report. Mm-hmm. It's the highest climbing skill.
Wow.
So if you think about it, if we've been educated out of creativity, and on the other side, it's the top skill needed in the workplace, like how are we reigniting their creativity muscle? Mm.
So first of all, I think that's fascinating. The one thing I do want to ask is because those figures are scary. You know, you go from 98% to 2%. Can we fix this creativity muscle?
100%.
Okay. So before we carry on, I just want to ask because a lot of people get confused between, there's these buzzwords that go around about design thinking and creativity. Is there a difference and what is the difference?
So there's a huge difference.
Okay.
So if you think of Maslow's hierarchy of needs,
yes.
let's put creativity at the bottom and then design thinking on top of it. Why?
Okay.
Because creativity is about bringing new into the mind.
Right.
Whereas design thinking or innovation or disruption is about bringing product, new products or services into the world.
Mm.
So we need to be able to first have this mental freedom, this freedom to be able to think of ideas, to ideate, because unfortunately we are linear thinkers.
Okay.
We are predictable and we are creatures of habit and we are boxed.
Mm-hmm.
And only when I actually go through a workshop and show people what's actually happened to us, do they sit with their mouths wide open and say, oh, I actually can't believe it. I'm actually a creature of habit, unpredictable, and we need to change their patterns.
Right.
And how we do it, well, how I do it in terms of my methodology is actually just finding those attributes you had as a five-year-old child, because that's when we had our highest level of creativity. So just imagine you gave a kid a box.
Right.
He would be able to play with that box for the whole day.
Mm.
If you gave me a box or somebody else a box, an adult a box, he would look at the box, think it's things to put inside, and eventually that would be that.
Right.
So that's what we call divergent thinking.
Okay.
And schools teach us convergent thinking.
Right.
They teach us that there's one right possible answer for a particular question.
Mm.
So if you think back to your maths days, were you good at maths?
Yes, but I'm not good at it now because clearly my daughter thinks that I'm very
incompetent. It's
exactly.
just a new system
yeah.
called the Singapore system,
yeah.
but a great actually system because it does teach us to problem solve and
well, that's the creativity side coming out of it.
They are looking at that.
Yeah.
And there are countries such as Malaysia and Singapore and Finland who are growing with that. But, to answer your other question is, so when you did maths, you were taught a formula to complete. So you were told X plus XY plus 2X equals.
Mm.
And then you taught a formula how to solve that equation. And then you get your answer.
Mm.
So it's interesting that we have to follow a particular way to do that. We're not given a formula and said solve it and come up with any way that you believe will solve that equation.
There's a structure.
You've got a form
and that box is that I'm visualizing this. I'm seeing like a box and that's kind of like we're told this is what you need to do and this is how you need to do it. Now, what I'm hearing is that we are all individuals and our creativity comes from, I guess, different parts of us and yet that kind of gets suppressed and then we spend a whole lot of time, engaging with people like you in our latter years to try and bring out creativity. So where does it start? I think practically, if we think about our listeners out there that either are feeling this themselves, because I know that it's not just kids. We always talk about kids and I think they are very important to focus on. But if we look at it from a person that is in their career, and we all hear about the future of work. We hear about AI. We hear about machines. And I don't want to get into that discussion because I think that's not relevant.
No, conversation
for now. It's important, but it is a conversation for another day. But what can people do immediately now? As I say, we're kind of stuck in a situation where we all hear about these things, yet we're not really sure of what we should be doing. So Can you tell us what advice would you have for us as adults to start thinking to, I guess, exercise this creativity muscle? And then more importantly, what can we do for our kids?
Okay, so 90% of my work currently is with corporates and with adults in terms of reigniting their creativity muscle. And what I do is, as I said, let's find the attributes and let's start with that now. So the first one is the ability to practice divergent thinking.
Right.
So what is that? If I say to you, Ian, here is a pen that I'm showing you now. What are the alternative uses that you could use for a pen other than writing or using it as a thing in your cell phone? What else? Ian, you've got 10 seconds now. Give me three other things that we could use a pen for.
Well, a horrible thing was I could stab someone with it. No, I wouldn't
want
to do
that.
But it could be used as a weapon.
Yeah.
So it could be used as like something to give someone direction. You know, you could point it and use it like to get someone's attention as a pointer. Or I guess you could use it to prop something up or like to keep a piece of paper on, you know, and that's.
So there are
three. That's my limited creativity for today.
Well, it's not limited, but that is just a simple sample of how we can start with divergent thinking. The next one that is very important is what we call challenging assumptions. Now we've spoken, you just mentioned AI, so I'm just going to follow up on this for 1 second. Is they say one thing that AI won't be able to replace is creativity.
Right.
But truthfully, AI will be able to replace certain creativity.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a matter of which one won't it be able to replace. And that one is called transformational creativity. That's the ability to challenge assumptions.
Yes.
AI won't be able to do that. Mm. We as humans can think out of the box where AI will be programmed inside a box. So, for example, why do we work 8 hours a day? Who one day woke up and said, let's work 8 hours a day?
Yeah. And I think that's, we haven't challenged the why, you know, and I think that's, it's sometimes difficult is because we're creatures of habit. And sometimes if you have to think too much out the box, it becomes too difficult. So we just say, well, that's how it's always been done. And I guess we're getting to a tipping point, Lauren, if I'm hearing you correct, is that we're running out of choices because when I say we're running out of choices, we actually have to make a decision about what we do as I guess adults, but also what do we start doing with our children? And I'm going to rock the boat a little bit, but I think it's been rocked already. It's just, coming up with something pragmatic. So what does the school system need to do? Because clearly there is a disconnect between what we are kind of giving our kids, which we think is the best for them, yet what you're saying is that there's a need because there's this transformational creativity that you talk about that is going to become so important and links back to, like you say, the number one skill that LinkedIn and other organizations are punting as the most important skill. So where does education and I guess self-awareness come into play?
So as I mentioned to you, I've been starting with a top-down approach.
Right.
But truthfully, it needs to start with a bottom-up approach. Mm-hmm. And where is that bottom? The school.
Okay.
So first of all, we need to rethink
yes.
the entire school system.
Right.
We need to also manage it in terms of technology.
Mm-hmm.
Technology is growing exponentially. The education system is remaining static
mm-hmm.
or linear. And there's this huge area or gap that we have now that's causing a lot of our children's to disconnect from what they are learning from school. So that's aside. How do we have to start with the principles of divergent thinking, not teaching them in such a linear way.
Mm.
We have to encourage our children to challenge assumptions. Now, if you think about it, when a little Johnny arrives at school and he puts up his hand and he starts asking why, eventually what does the teacher say? She says, stop it, Johnny, put down your hand, your questions are stupid.
So it's a suppression.
It's a suppression. So now we have this feeling that if we try and challenge anything, we're being judged or it's stupid. So what do? We stop asking why.
Yeah.
The next thing is that as we're going through school, we lose the ability to observe.
Right.
We become so focused and so linear on what we need to produce that we actually stop looking at what's actually around us. And a lot of education should be taught not necessarily in the classroom.
Mm.
It should be taught in different places. You mentioned earlier that your son you and your family went to Amsterdam, and you said your son got a great education just by being in a house in Amsterdam where he showed where some, I think, where people were hidden.
Yeah, that's correct.
And it
yeah.
was like a history lesson 101 that really he could feel it, he could see it, he, you know, it was so practical and made it so much more interesting and applicable. So we have to look at that. And then there's this concept of what we call conceptual blending or mashing up. And what our brain currently does now is it likes to put things in patterns.
Right.
And so you store information, you organize information in patterns. And so I'll give an example. Ian, in 10 seconds, give me as many types of birds as possible. Name me as many types of birds as possible.
Jeez. Parrot, cockatiel, canary, dove, pigeon.
Okay.
Not
brilliant.
Bad, eh?
Very good. So what have you done? You've gone to your bird box in your brain. You've pulled out the information.
Right.
If I turn that question around and I say to you, a bird is an example of? You've got 10 seconds. Give me.
A bird's an example of, in my, it's flight. I think about the fact that it shows that it can fly.
Right. So you've managed to name one thing, but it could be food, it could be flight, it could be love, it could be peace. There are so many things. But what happens there is that you have to come out of your bird box and you have to go look in the other boxes for the information because the information is not there. And that's what we call connectivity.
Okay.
The ability to connect, come out of a box and connect with other boxes is conceptual blending and mashing up. And, you know, recently I was in Edinburgh and I saw, we were into a ginnery and they were showing us how they mix all the different spices with the different gins. And, you know, it's becoming very common now, all these different gins with all these different, botanicals.
Yeah, it's becoming like this whole craft thing. It was,
exactly. Because they say it's quite reasonable to open a ginnery now. But what was interesting, what is their most, or the product that people just can't get enough of at the moment? It's called anti-gin. In other words, it's gin with ants in it.
No, you're joking.
No, I'm not. And it's because it's something new. It's something different. It's they've taken two products, gin and ants, and they've and mashed it together, conceptually blended, and now they have a product called anti-gin that people just can't get enough because they thought beyond botanicals. They thought beyond just spices and everything. And they're saying people just can't get enough of it. They can't make enough of it. And I'm sure eventually people get tired of that. And then once again, we have to train our brain to be able to do that.
So what I've picked up is first of all, we've got this creativity muscle, which is something that hasn't been exercised for a long time. It's been suppressed and it's kind of like, it needs a bit of an ignition. I call it an ignition, but it needs a bit of an awakening. We need to, and the ways of doing it is a different way of thinking. And I think one of the best ways that we can approach this is also to have a better understanding of ourselves and how we think. So, we all know, and I want to come back to something that you shared with me about your experience in India. So I'm coming back and I'm holding this for last because first of all, it's a huge congratulations that you went there. You won an award. Tell us about the award and then I'll ask you the education question.
Sure.
Okay.
So, I went to India to speak at the World Innovation Congress and World Women in Leadership Congress. Is attended by thousands of people from all over the world. Wow. And the award that I won was Innovator of the Year for Human Skills Development, specifically on the top three skills needed in the workplace, which are critical thinking, complex problem solving, and creativity.
That's amazing.
So it was unbelievable. Like for one day, it was that high that what I'm doing and what I've been researching and doing workshops for the past few years has like finally got recognition, and I was extremely proud of that moment.
That's amazing, and you should be. And if I can look at it, it's an affirmation. It's an affirmation that there is an acceptance that this is the way we need to start evolving and thinking. We mentioned, and I did say that we're going to link this to the budget, but in a positive way. Now, you were mentioning to me something fascinating because you did look at the education system. What was one of the things that really stuck out that perhaps as South Africans we could learn about?
So the one thing that stuck out is I was in one of the slums called Dabaria the one day. And that's where Slumdog Millionaire was filmed.
Yeah.
So I had a great tour guide and he was taking me around. But he took me to the school and the bell goes and I see all these young kids come out of school. But at the same time, he had told me this is a high school, primary school. So I said to him, like, where are the high school students? He said, no, the high school students actually attend school from 8 to 12:30.
Mm.
And then in the same school, they run it from 1:30 to 5 o'clock. So if you look at different ways of doing things. So we know we are under constraint in the education system. We need budget. We need more money. And this was just one thing that is different, that maybe a school could run both a high school and primary school simultaneously, which would mean that a lot more people could attend the schools, a lot more, you know, time would be given to more the stuff I like to do, practicing outside of school and actually being a child.
Yeah.
Because our children go to school from like 7 o'clock till 3-4 o'clock. Where's that time to actually be creative?
Absolutely.
And come back. So it would be wonderful, from a skills development, but also wonderful from a budgetary point of view that one school services two high schools. So that was just something I noted and I thought, Tito Mboweni could maybe use that in terms of his budget speech tonight to how we change the
we'll try get hold of him and see if we can get that in. Lana, we've run out of time, unfortunately.
Thank you,
very quickly, how can people get hold of you?
People can get hold of me either on Facebook.
Okay, cool.
Go to Unicorn. They can go to my Twitter feed, which is at the Lana Roy, or at Goats to Unicorn. And you can contact me via email, which is lana@goats2unicorns.com.
And you'll have to explain to everybody that reaches out to you how you got to Goats to Unicorn. Unfortunately, that's where we have to leave it. I will post all those details, Lana.
Thank you,
Leroy. Yeah. You are incredible. And please continue doing all the good work. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Thanks for the super opportunity. Thank you.
Have a great day. Cheers.